The traditional Christian greeting, grace and peace to you. Words which speak to us of the gift of God's loving presence, the gift of divine embrace and acceptance. God's on our side, God is with us, that greeting says. But to this we need to add another greeting, perhaps stamina and strength to you. Not just grace and peace, but stamina and strength to you. Words which speak to us of a spirit of tenacity, the gift of holding on, the perseverance needed to see us through difficult times. Both greetings have their place and are summed up profoundly by the author Anne Lamott, who says, grace can be the experience of a second wind, when even though what you want is clarity and resolution, what you get is stamina and poignancy and the strength to hang on. Don't you love those words? That first line there, grace can be the experience of a second wind, a second breath. That's the stamina and strength side of it. And this brings us to our Bible text for the day. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. Blessed is the one who perseveres under trial, because having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love him. Those are the words from James chapter 1 that we heard read earlier. And I'd like to make a link between this call to a persevering faith with what we read in Isaiah chapter 35, and we heard that read earlier. Isaiah 35 presents a picture of transformation and a call to resilient faith that leads to that transformation. Isaiah 35 presents a vivid contrast to the chapter that comes before, chapter 34, where we are told Yahweh, God, is enraged against all the nations. Chapter 34 is the picture of the Lord's judgment. The Hebrew people find themselves in Babylonian exile, far away from home. They find themselves in a wilderness, a desert experience, physically and spiritually. It is a bleak landscape as they look around. But in chapter 35, the very next chapter, the prophet Isaiah, the prophet poet, shall we call him, pictures a transformed landscape, a glad land, where the desert, he says, will rejoice and blossom like a rose garden. That's a picture that's good to hold in mind in our present circumstances, isn't it? The desert will rejoice and blossom like a rose. Those who have lived in deserts or through droughts now know how quickly arid places can come alive with color after a good rain. What's that place everyone goes and looks at flowers when the rains come out? The whole landscape is just filled with flowers. It is a sight that inspires joy in the hearts of those who are accustomed, who have grown accustomed to seeing the bland desert colors. And this is the image that the prophet poet captures to convey the sense of vitality and joy that will be present in the place that he is portraying, a place of restoration, renewal, and hope, a new place. Wilderness, dry land, and desert refer to the arid place that could be lovely when the rains came, but they seldom came. The wilderness could stretch a shepherd's ingenuity, as it's doing with our farmers, stretch their ingenuity to survive, stretched it to breaking point, and could claim the life of an unwary traveler. But while a desert wilderness might seem forbidding, it was in the wilderness that Yahweh forged the people of Israel into a nation. During their 40 years of wandering in the wilderness after leaving Egypt, The Lord was with the people of Israel so that they lacked nothing, we are told. It was in the wilderness that the Lord humbled Israel. And we are told in Deuteronomy 8:3, fed them with manna, which they didn't know, neither did their fathers know, never seen it before, that he might make them know that man does not live by bread alone, but man lives by everything that proceeds out of the mouth of Yahweh, out of the mouth of God. Moving forward in the Bible story, we come to John the Baptist, who goes into the wilderness to proclaim the need for repentance. Jesus, a little later, will be tempted and formed for his ministry in the wilderness and will retreat to the wilderness to pray. It's a place of formation for him. In other words, the wilderness is inextricably interwoven with the spiritual history and discipline of the people of God. Inextricably woven with the spiritual history and formation of God's people. Therefore, a wilderness that blossoms abundantly and rejoices with singing represents more than geography and climate. It is a metaphor for spiritual renewal and vitality, for a people who are in a right relationship with the Lord and are blessed to enjoy the prosperity which the Lord has given them. Following the picture of transformation in the first two verses of Isaiah 35 comes the call to a resilient faith, a call to persevere. Having painted this picture of what could be, a picture of hope, the prophet poet says, now dig in, persevere. He says, strengthen the weak hands, make firm the feeble knees. Tell those who have a fearful heart, be strong. Don't be afraid. Behold, your God will come, and God will save you. In those words, lovely. At this point, Israel has been in exile for decades, forgotten what it looked like to be back where they came from, and their bondage had sapped their spirit and strength. The first step to recovery of physical strength is recovery of the spirit. The prophet calls people to begin that recovery and begins to lay the foundation for them to hope again. A person with no hope can be expected to have weak hands and feeble knees, as the prophet says. But when hope is restored in the soul, he or she will find reservoirs of new untapped strength, both spiritual and physical. Tell those who have a fearful heart, he says, be strong, don't be afraid. Fear makes people's hearts beat faster as the adrenaline pumps and makes them weak. But these people have no reason to be afraid, because Yahweh is their God and Yahweh is present with them. So this brings me to our third reading for the morning, Matthew 7. And to paraphrase that well-loved parable, the message is, build your house on the rock, not on the sand. Then it will withstand the flooding rains when they come. So we ask ourselves, what is the rock on which we are called to build? Surely, it is the hope of God's presence, promise, and faithfulness. The rock of God's unfailing, steadfast, secure love. A love that holds us through difficult times and holds out the hope of transformation and wholeness for the future. In the words of the hymn writer Anna Waring, and we'll sing this a little later, in heavenly love abiding, that's the rock, in heavenly love abiding, no change my heart shall fear, and safe as such confiding, for nothing changes here. The storm may roar around me, my heart may low be laid, but God is round about me, and can I be dismayed? This is the very essence of resilient, persevering faith, the rock on which we build, God's presence, God's power, God's promise. Grace and peace to you, stamina and strength to you as well. Well, let's sing that song to which I refer.